You are listening to Native Questions, live here at UCSD.
My name is June.
I'm Avanti.
My name is Lala.
Chris.
My name's Ray.
And today we're going to be talking about the Indian Relocation Act, as well as a few interviews that we performed with members of our talk and with members of the community. And we're going to explore the changes that have occurred throughout the years due to the Indian Relocation Act.
For more information, please visit nativequestions.com.
First off, we're going to have a conversation between two of our team members, June and Lala, about the Urban Relocation Program.
So tell me what you know about the Urban Indian Relocation Program.
Okay, well, it was first passed as a program in the early 1940s, and it was basically a way to assimilate Native Americans into mainstream U.S. society. And it was officially passed as a law around the 1950s under President Truman.
So why do you think, why would the U.S. government try to assimilate Native Americans into Western society?
One of the reasons, which under the text of the Indian Relocation Act, was to provide these provide the natives with a way to kind of make more money, have better jobs, better education opportunities. But under the kind of fine print, one of their motives was to take over the land and kind of find profit out of it.
Yeah, that would make sense because, like, obviously the program gave the Native Americans the choice to leave the reservation or not. And I feel like it's kind of, if the natives ended up leaving the reservation, then there's like this free land that they could take and eventually develop and into corporations and and whatnot.
And the reasons that they left, it's because they thought they were going to get all these promised, like promised free housing, free
Yeah,
jobs,
like free food, free lodging.
But many of these promises weren't kept, and by the 1980s, about 750,000 people had already moved to the cities, and there was, it was hard at that point for them to move back into.
How come? Why was it? Why couldn't they just return?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I mean, leaving the reservation would be, first of all, difficult in itself. And maybe there is some, once they realized that they couldn't find the support that they thought they would have, maybe they were embarrassed to return home. Maybe, like, their families were there and they felt ashamed. Or maybe, like, they just thought, like, oh, I should just stick it out. Like, I need to, you know, improve my situation. I need to, you know, at the time, they were like, I need to assimilate into the workforce. You know, there's, like, a lot of pressure on them. So I feel like that's why it would be hard to return.
Do you think that there's any kind of difference now in this age between natives who are living in the reservations and those that are living in the cities?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I mean, that's an interesting topic because I feel like there's lots of urban natives who feel like they're living in two different worlds, like living in, you know, a developed Western society and then also has like roots in their, you know, with their tribe and their ancestral land, and they're kind of torn between these two different worlds. And then also natives who, you know, come from the reservation and, like, once they leave and, like, you know, experience the world, I feel like now it's hard for them to go back because they see how horrible the living conditions are.
So I was reading this paper recently. It came out in 2011, and it talked about how encouraging kind of the presence of cultural activities in Native youth kind of boosted their spirits, or like it was healthy for them. What are your thoughts on that?
Like the Native youth activities,
like,
such as like powwows, like ceremonies. Oh, Yeah, definitely. Like, that's really awesome that I feel like especially now, like, tribes are really focusing on that because there's this thought that, like, eventually the Native American culture will die out, you know, due to various reasons. And it's really important to emphasize, like, what Native American culture was really about and, you know, these powwows and ceremonies and, you know, hunting and herbal medicine and, you know, all of that stuff's like really important, and especially to direct it towards the youth because that way they could preserve their culture.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any experience with powwows? And
yeah, so I'm a member of the Pitt River Tribe up in Northern California, and I'm also Wintu and Modoc and Pomo, and I've been to tons of powwows, and I personally don't really like powwows. I prefer like more of the ceremonies.
Yeah.
So like my tribe, we do like an ancestral run every year, mm-hmm. and we run from Mount Lassen all the way, Mount Shasta all the way to Mount Lassen, and it's a 3-day run.
Wow.
And the whole time, like, we're carrying these we call them our spirit sticks,
yeah.
and it's all like our ancestors made them, and like everybody keeps running with them. So it's like a really cool, you know, annual event for like the tribal members to attend, because it's like everybody comes and sees each other, says hi, mm-hmm. and we socialize, and at the same time we also like remember, you know, where we came from, mm-hmm. and especially like the land that we were on.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. So you would say kind of, I guess, as a member of the youth community, that these ceremonies are kind of beneficial to your identity,
definitely.
Overall well-being.
Yes, definitely.
Lala Forrest here. In order to highlight some of the issues that Native Americans have faced, not only in the past, but are still encountering today, I conducted an interview with Geneva Lofton Fitzsimmons. Geneva is currently employed as the student program coordinator for the UCSD California NARCH program and is funded by the National Institute of Health. And Geneva was the former chairperson for the Viseno Band of Indians located in northern San Diego and has earned her BS in criminal justice from San Diego State University.
So why don't you introduce yourself to us? What is what tribe you're from, your name, your... what do you do and all that?
Okay, so my name is Geneva Lofton Fitzsimmons. I'm a member of the La Jolla Band of the Viseno Indians, currently working for UCSD as a consultant to the Indian Health Council for their project California NARCH. I'm the student program coordinator. I've been in this position now, I think, about 11, 12 years, and the main goal of the NARCH program is to recruit and mentor Indian students to do research in health disparities in tribal communities. So I'm at four campuses, UCSD, San Diego State, Cal State San Marcos, and Palo Alto. So we work with, you know, students in different places. Some students are undergraduates, or graduate students, or even PhD students who are actively in school. And then we have students who have graduated and that are in their gap year. And we continue to work with those students to bring them back into college so they can finish their degree. And it's, we have students that usually stay out, usually 2 to 3 years, and do work in research or the jobs, but they do come back. And I think that's unusual for most programs. Number one, they don't provide any gap year services. And two, that students in our community do come back. And they leave for many reasons. And it seems to work with them, for them that way.
So coming back, like, they come back to the NARCH program specifically, or like they come back to like where from? Or?
In the sense that they contact us for services. Mm-hmm. Somebody has an undergraduate degree, a bachelor's, and wants to go on to grad school. And we had talked to them before about that, but they needed a break. They wanted some time away from school. So they return, we're talking about getting the GRE, possible majors for whatever their end goal is, helping them to make that bridge onto the next step, whatever that might be. We've got students who've gotten their master's and trying to get into a PhD program. So we work with like the National Institute of Health, where they have opportunities there to do a post-bac, or after they've gotten their master's to do a program after that, that can help them to prepare them
to apply and make them more eligible.
Yeah.
For a PhD program or for medical school. We have students who are just in medical school. This is a great pathway for them.
Mm-hmm. NARCH stands for Native American Research Centers for Health.
It's super focused on getting like underrepresented college students opportunities in research, and we really wanted to push people more into the STEM fields.
Yeah, and STEM actually stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics. And the statistics for Native Americans are one of the most underrepresented in these fields.
Yeah, that's right. So programs like NARCH are really trying to get undergrads into giving them opportunities in research, getting them rec letters, anything to make them more competitive applicants for grad school.
Often our students who have gotten a bachelor's degree need to raise up their GPA.
Yeah.
So going to graduate school is one way of being able to do that. We also help our students get into research. And most of the time it's research at their campus through one of the programs, science programs like MARC, MDRS, and other programs that can provide additional services for our students, whether it's a stipend, mentoring, research opportunities. And then so we're there also to support the student. We don't stop working with them if they're in another program. So we work collectively to provide the best services to students.
So how did the program get started? Was there obviously a dissociation of like Native Americans and getting in health or science like careers? Like, so how did you guys get it started, I guess? What were the reasons behind it?
I think it started about 2 years before I started. So I think they've seen the need that Indian students were not interested in health and sciences. And if they were, often they didn't complete their degree. Yeah.
And why do you think that areas. Is?
Just sometimes not being sure what to do next, direction, what does it take to get to grad school. So maybe they were interested and then got their degree and then realized maybe their GPA wasn't high enough. They didn't take the GRE in time. They didn't apply for graduate school in time. So often it was just a lack of information.
Mm-hmm.
There's been many students that are, have a great GPA, but it's like, oh, I didn't know I had to take the GRE. Oh, there's study programs you could take. When is the application for graduate school? So it's kind of missed opportunities usually.
Yeah.
And for many students, they were kind of far and few between, but they weren't, I never thought about, STEM major. I do well on these subjects. That might be something I'm interested in. So definitely the end line was that the National Institute of Health, set up this funding for these NARCH programs because they could see there was a lack of tribal students going into college and coming out wanting to do research and health disparities.
Mm-hmm. And then how about yourself? Like, how are you in the school setting and academic-wise? Like, were you, did you not have, many resources and you didn't know about graduate school and, the GRE, MCAT, blah, 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 blah? Or were you, really interested in science and you wanted to pursue a career in that field?
It's funny how I came to this job because, I'm not a science major. I'm a criminal justice major with interest in law.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated from San Diego State. But I've worked in the tribal community for many years, a former tribal chairperson for my tribe. And this job came up, and people told me, there's this great job of recruiting. I think you'd be great. And I had to learn. I had to learn about all the process because I'd only gotten a bachelor's. I hadn't gone on, so I didn't know about the timeliness of applying and the GREs or MCATs, whatever you have to take.
Yeah.
And so that I was like a lot of typical students that came to school here.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't even aware of what science programs were being offered and then applying for them. So that's the other service we provide for students is help with their applications, letters of recommendation. So I kind of came to this program just not even being a part of that health and science community.
Yeah, that's really awesome that you got involved. But you mentioned that you were the chairperson for your tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Can you, I feel like a lot of our listeners don't know the duties or responsibilities that a chairperson has for their tribe. Can you explain how your time was and what kind of duties you fulfilled?
Like a small, it would be like looking at being elected to a small town, we have the responsibility of all areas from, you know, making sure there's services, you know, people write grants for programs and services, from education, for water, infrastructure, really infrastructure, because the tribe pays for that. They don't receive money from the state. They have to apply to federal government for that kind of money. So I think it's providing services to people, depending where you're located. Like, well, we're up in the mountains, there isn't a bus that goes up there. So our people are always looking for employment. We have a campground that we've operated since 1930. So that's one of our main sources of employment, in addition to our store. So it's busy work. It's trying to meet the needs of your people, coordinating efforts with housing, health services, legal services. So it's a whole infrastructure that tries to assist our tribal members as much as possible for the people living there and the people off the reservation.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think are some of the situations that specifically your people are dealing with that they need help in, or like they're lacking the type of resources they're lacking? Like you mentioned, the transportation. Can you think of any other like examples that like Native people in general have to endure?
I think health issues. It's, I think, been a real challenge for our people, and just education, lack of education, so job opportunities are more limited. And then to get to the basic of, can you even get to the job, and do you have transportation and car insurance? But I think it's challenging for our people because of maybe the education and training. There used to be a time when there was a training program in vocational, you know, plumbing and construction and things of that sort, where people can get trained and stay in the community and make a good living, where now they work more seasonal, like in our campground, when our campground is open. So, and health. Unfortunately, we have a high number of deaths per year of our people dying from accidents or
like suicide illness. Rates and
car accidents.
And heart disease.
I don't see so much in my reservation suicide. It's more car accidents. So
car
maybe
accidents.
It may include drinking and driving, or
that's
it may
true.
Be drugs.
Yeah.
Or it may just be the area that we live in, but that's difficult for families.
Like Geneva was saying, there's so many health issues affecting Native Americans today, especially those in the reservations.
Mm-hmm. And these issues include diabetes, injuries, sexual abuse, and suicide. And some of them are kind of the highest rates that we observe in the U.S.
Yeah, especially there's a lot of health research going on right now on diabetes. The Pima people have like the highest risk of diabetes in the world, and it's interesting all the research that's going on in the reservations.
Yeah, and there's programs at both the tribal level and the federal level, and some of the problems with that is that one program may work for one tribe but not the other.
There's an interesting cultural shift that's going on right now with the Native American people. They're going back to their traditional practices and support groups. Things like sweat lodges are being used for the reduction of PTSD, and going back to eating their tribal foods to help reduce the risk of diabetes. It's an interesting paradigm.
My dad is he's Pima, from the Pima tribe, and then I just took a class, metabolic biochemistry, where they told us a study that was done on the Pima people up in, down in Arizona, and they found like 90% of like the people that they studied were like their BMI was like above normal, and like they were obese and blah blah blah, and it was just like this huge, like 90% of like the people, their people were like obese and had like critical like health problems like heart disease, diabetes, and like all that stuff. And it's just crazy to think like how that happened, especially with like that high number. 90%.
Right, and it wasn't always that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure their diet, like our diet, consisted of more of the natural food in that area, you know, with more of, like for us, it's our acorn, a lot of the greens that grow naturally, the wild fruit and berries and things, the wild game, you know, birds, the deer, other animals. who I'm sure are like us, hunting for those things, but that's not available anymore, or it's very limited.
Yeah.
It's and really changed.
Now you have to deal with like processed foods and like all that kind of
commodities.
Stuff. Commodities. Yeah.
I'm sure you guys had commodities
in
your
area.
Yeah, exactly. The commodities is still something that our people get.
Yeah.
And the food that their federal government's providing. Yes, it's helpful because there's food, but the food they're getting is not always the healthiest.
Yeah, it's not. Yeah. I remember my, because I remember growing up, we would receive like boxes of cheese and like processed cheese and just like canned foods.
Canned meat,
yeah exactly.
Which would have a lot of fat in it and stuff. Yeah, challenging for our people. Plus I think for, it's been a struggle. It's a struggle for our communities because sometimes of the high rate of drug or alcohol abuse in families and things. And it affects many areas, affects your children, affects your own adult. And that's an issue also. Domestic violence.
Lastly, we're going to talk about the issues facing Native Americans today, in particular the health issues, and how programs like NARCH and other student orgs can help students get more involved with their communities.
So do you think, just kind of like off topic, I don't know, it's like the only thing that's popping in my mind right now. Being a Native woman, one of the issues that I'm currently facing is as I feel like I'm progressing up in the academic realm, like pursuing a higher education, I feel that at times people kind of get angry at me because they think like I receive like special privileges or like I will get accepted into programs at graduate school like over them just because I'm Native. So I'm kind of like having issues dealing with that. Like, how do I overcome that? And like, I kind of feel like I feel guilty in a way, and I was kind of wondering like what you.
I don't think you should. I mean, because you yourself have the grades to be able to be where you're at. Nobody gave you anything. All we've tried to do is make sure that door's open for you to have the opportunity to be able to apply. I mean, everything you've gotten, you've done that on your own, you know. So you shouldn't feel that way. I think people that are jealous are going to be jealous. You know, you've worked hard. You're not going to get anything to go where you're headed. You're going to have to earn that. And you know that. You've worked hard to bring your grades up and doing well. So,
You know,
I think...
Did you feel like that or like a feeling similar to that, like growing up? Like where you're just...
You hear people, because my parents, we grew up poor like everybody else, but my parents always encouraged education. They really stressed it, because in their own life, my dad had gone to boarding school. I think he had only gone like to the fifth or sixth grade. And my mom, on the other hand, had finished like community college, and that was really rare for people back then.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a grandmother who believed in reading, and she felt like that was the door to, you know, that was the key to success, because if you could read, you could figure out anything. So when you come from families that stress that, they always felt like, well, we had all this money or, you know, opportunities. It's like, no, we didn't. You know, we worked hard. My parents worked hard to get what they have. So
I think,
you know, people are going to say what they want. I think you just, you know who you are. And I want to encourage Indian students who may be listening to this to get an education and come back to the reservation. We need everybody. And it doesn't have to be they turn their whole life around just to come back, but they serve somehow. We give back, because we all need to give back to our community. I need to, you need to, you need to. Because if we don't, then our people struggle. Just because we've got that opportunity, you know, because we had the opportunity to be good students, and maybe we went to good schools, or we had somebody who stepped in and helped us along the way. We need to put our hand down and help other people, because other people have helped us. So I really want to encourage students to do that and find their place. And it could be in an urban or reservation community.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be through things that you do. So it could be research that works towards diabetes. Maybe you're not on the reservation, but you're working towards a research that can help in dealing with people with that illness. So there's many ways.
Yeah. Great. I couldn't say it better. That was great. And what would you say to the Native youth who are the kids who are thinking about pursuing education, but perhaps like they're going through, you know, a rough time, or like they're kind of like, oh, I'll do it eventually. Like, what, like, what's the like number one advice you would tell them to do in order for them to like reach a university setting?
I would encourage you to, well, if you're in high school, to talk with a counselor, and if your grades aren't as high as they need to be to apply to a four-year, go to a community college. I think a community college is really, in fact, most of the Indian students that go on to college start at the community college. And don't take, you don't have to take full load. Take a couple classes, see what that's like.
Yeah.
And definitely find someone there that you could talk to, a mentor. It doesn't even have to be an Indian person. It could be a non-Indian person. Just someone willing to listen to you, that knows what's available at your campus, because there's always support services, and I think that's what most of us don't know when we first start, about all the things that are available to help you to complete and be successful at your campus.
That's true.
So I would say that would be, encourage you to start one or two classes. It doesn't have to be a full load, and I think sometimes people think, if I can't take a full load, I can't go. No, start off slow, you know, and I think at least get a little experience and then make your decision.
Great. Yeah, that's awesome advice. Like, I can definitely agree. Like, once I started exploring my options, and especially like at the university, I was just like, oh my god, there's all these programs, and like I can do research, I can do medicine, and like I can do like basically like whatever I want. So I totally agree with you. Like, once I started looking into like the resources and like realizing people are there to help you, and like that really advanced me and inspired me to like keep, you know, pursuing that.
We want to see you be successful in your area of interest.
So tell us what we talked about today, Chris.
So in conclusion, we started with talking about the Urban Relocation Program, and we saw that from its establishment, you know, about 60 years ago, since then, all these other programs have come into fruition that have helped not only with the integration of Native Americans into our society, but they've also helped promote education and helped motivate Native Americans to pursue some of the most powerful fields that are available, and some of the most, you know, awesome careers that you can take in. You know, Lala here decided to, you know, she wants to go MD, PhD, and that's a lot of the help that you've received has been from programs like these.
Yeah, for example, NARCH. As we heard from Geneva, just how education is really important for the Native youth to, you know, take advantage of in order to make changes, not only in society, but also in their Native communities back at home.
Right. And the other interesting thing is that, as has been discussed throughout this podcast, not only have these programs tried to help Native Americans integrate into society, but they've also created kind of a reference point for their cultural background by generating, you know, ceremonies and places where you can go and celebrate who you are, who you really are, down to your blood and bones. So not only does it help integration, but it also helps the newer generations to stay connected with who they really are.
Great. I couldn't say it better, Chris.
And, you know, NARCH isn't the only program that we've talked about. There's a few other programs that we're going to shout out.
Yeah, so right now we're going to go into our shout-outs.
So we're going to do our shout-outs now. And in this segment, we're going to talk about a Native American organization that we find interesting. So with us here is everybody. And let's start with Avanthi. Why don't you tell us what your organization of choice is?
So my shout-out is to Soaring Eagles. They're probably a very lively group that you see on TV and on parades. They're super fun. They teach young Native Americans on reservation and urban the traditional dances and powwows, and they really bring the community together for a fun activity like that. June, do you want to tell us about your shout-out?
Sure. My shout-out's going to go to Intertribal Sports. Their mission is to engage tribal communities, the youth communities, in sports-related activities, and hopefully foster some thoughts about culture while also having fun, and overall just create leaders of the future.
My shout-out is to the Native Wellness Institute, which is a nonprofit organization founded in 2000. It exists to promote the well-being of the tribal community and promote learning through programs, special training,
And yeah, it's really, really wonderful institute.
My shout out goes to California NARCH, which stands for Native American Research Center for Health. And what NARCH is a research project funded by the National Institute of Health and Indian Tribal Services that aims to increase the numbers of Native Americans in science and in medicine.
And my shout out goes to NASA, which is the Native American Student Alliance. And they aim to improve educational resources for Native Americans and culture as well. The ITRC here on the campus at UCSD is the Intertribal Research Center. They provide essentially a location for students to study and hang out. And at the same time, I've also walked through campus before and ended up walking into a powwow that was held by NASA. And
Very cool.
Everybody want to say their names one last time?
My name is Lala.
This is June.
Avanti.
This is Ray.
And this is Chris. Thank you for listening to
Native Questions.